My fabulous aunt on my mother's side, my Aunt Betty, was an almost mythic figure of fabled stature in our family during my childhood in the early 50s. Aunt Betty had married a boy from Halifax in March 1915, and as tragedy has a way of touching every family, he volunteered for the army the following month and gave his life on the barren vistas of the Western Front in Ypres, aiding the kibosh of the German menace in Europe. Betty was understandably heartbroken. Married for a month before the husband enlisted, a very short honeymoon in Quebec, and then nothing. She never remarried, resigned herself to a childless, manless spinsterhood, draped herself in dark velvets, and remained an old woman from the time she was 21. But 40-odd years later, when Frank and I and our cousins knew her, we weren't privy to this history. We just loved the lacy mantillas, the liver-spotted hands with the swollen veins, the handkerchiefs stuffed up her sleeves, the sturdy, stern black shoes. Though she had no children, Betty loved them. One of the highlights of the Christmas season was the annual nieces and nephews party at Aunt Betty's grotto, as we called it. The crew arrived piecemeal and scattered about the house. We'd then be retrieved from out of the cupboards and bathrooms and lost again as we filtered to the basement, been found messing around with the furnace, and saved. And then, finally, all collected into the drawing room. Then Aunt Betty, seated like a queen above her court, would speak to us. "Do you know what I got for Christmas?" she would ask. "No, Aunt Betty, what did you get for Christmas?" "I received a huge box of glorious chocolates." "Ooh," we'd coo. "Would you like to see them?" "Oh, yes, Aunt Betty, yes." "Paul," she would say, "or Ethel, or Rosemary," every year a different child, "go upstairs to my bedroom, and on the dresser you will find a large box of chocolates. Bring it down to us, would you, my dear?" The appointed child disappeared out the hall and up the stairs. We could hear the tiny feet through the ceiling, imagining the journey to the bedroom, the sight of the box, and the careful return to the throng. "Thank you, my dear," she'd say, always the courteous one. Then she'd hold out before us the hugest, thickest box of chocolates any of us had ever seen. Whether it was our imaginations or reality, the box seemed to get bigger every year. We all inched closer to her. She'd work off the cover. Out slipped the map, the one that showed you where the hard caramels were so that you didn't have to poke your thumb through everything else to find them. And then the ruffled sleeve would be removed and revealed to all an array of glistening globs. The deep, dark, dusky hue of bittersweet chocolate. The lighter luster of the most favorite milk chocolate. And the chalky pearlescence of the acquired taste of sweet white chocolate. We conjured up mental images of chocolate-robed nuts and nougat, toffee and Turkish delight. We were practically in her lap by now. "Aren't they beautiful?" she asked. "Yes, Aunt Betty," we answered, hardly drooling at all on the cousin in front. "Yes, they are beautiful." "Yes," she said, "they are." And then back in would go the sleeve, and then the map, and on would go the cover. "They are beautiful chocolates. Now, dear, bring them back to my room and put them back on the dresser." Every year, the same drill, and never a chocolate for any of us. It was only after Aunt Betty died in 1995 and I was helping Mom sort out the estate that I found the box of chocolates, still intact, still on the dresser. They were chocolates of the highest quality, I realized. Belgian chocolates. A Christmas gift from a lonely infantryman away from home for the first time to the young wife he'd left behind. ¶¶